Couple of narratives from Genesis chapters 17 and 18. God said to Abraham, "As for your wife, I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall come from her." Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, "Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And the story moves on a bit. Of course, they have to tell Sarah about this plan they're hatching, right? "Where is Sarah, your wife?" Sarah was listening at the tent door. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" Crack you up. Sounds to me like that's the script and setting for a pharmaceutical commercial. An essay on this passage from another Presbyterian minister, Frederick Buechner. Quantitatively speaking, you don't find all that much laughter in the Bible. But qualitatively, there's nothing quite like it to be found anywhere else. There are a couple of chapters in the book of Genesis that positively shake with it. Sarah was never going to see 90 again. And Abraham had already hit 100 when an angel told them that the stork was on its way at last. They both of them almost collapsed. Abraham laughed till he fell on his face, and Sarah stood cackling behind the tent door so the angel wouldn't think she was being rude as the tears streamed down her cheeks. When the baby finally came, they named him Isaac, which in Hebrew translates laughter. Sarah and her husband had plenty of hard knocks in their time, and there were plenty more of them still to come. But at that moment, when the angel told them they'd better start dipping into their pension funds for cash to build a nursery, the reason they laughed was that it suddenly dawned on them that the wildest dreams they'd ever had hadn't been half wild enough. What a deal, huh? People were telling me after the funeral this week, you know, "I didn't expect to laugh so much." Well, you might as well laugh, especially when you're remembering and honoring the life of a character like Mike Mitchell. You might as well laugh, because it's good for you. Several ways that experience and research have taught us that laughter makes us whole again, especially after we've been broken. Norman Cousins was the editor of the publication, The Saturday Review, and midlife and a little bit beyond, he contracted an autoimmune disease which affected the connective tissue between his muscles and his bones, leaving him in pretty much constant, rather miserable pain. And in short order, he was taking many, many pain medications, and it was, in effect, wrecking his life as badly as the cause of the pain. Well, Norman Cousins read an essay about the healing power of laughter, and there is a physiological basis for this. A strong sense of humor actually releases endorphins in the brain, and endorphins are the body's own natural painkillers. Well, he found that an hour or two of Marx Brothers movies kept him as pain-free as any pharmaceutical product. Laughter is good for you. It actually can reduce the pain. It's also a good deflection for emotions that are hurtful. Laughter and anger are two sides of the same coin. Among our most gifted comedians are people who have a devastatingly sharp sense of satire, irony, and inconsistency. Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, edgy, angry, and also very precise indicators and demonstrators of the absurd. Maybe no one better than Richard Pryor. African-American who really had a dreadfully difficult life for many, many reasons, largely brought on by himself. And yet his insight into the irony and inconsistency of, among many other things, race relations, was not only hysterical, but in many ways healing. One of the albums that he made of his stand-up act depicted him on the cover, trussed up in chains and ropes, the noose around his neck, surrounded by men dressed as members of the Ku Klux Klan. The title of the album, Was It Something I Said? His own self-destructiveness found a way to help others, even though it did have an effect on him. In the course of trying to make cocaine just a little bit better, he set himself on fire. And in his comedy act later, in retrospect of that, he said, when you run down the street on fire, people tend to get out of your way. And then he'd light a match on stage and go like this. What's this? This is Richard Pryor running down the street. Unbelievably self-deprecating in a way, but also taking an incredible amount of anger, turning it on its head, and bringing to it humor and insight. I don't think anybody would argue that the healthcare system in America is broken. Now, we can debate and decide, you know, what the best way to fix it is, but I don't think anybody can argue that it's broken. And politics and religion, subjects we shouldn't talk about, mainly because they make us so angry, are just amazing sources of irony, inconsistency, and hypocrisy. I called my doctor. I am not kidding. This is a true story. I called my doctor a couple years ago, and I said, I'm coming in for a physical. Have you got the flu shot? He said, we don't have the flu shot this year. Well, where can I go get a flu shot? He said, go to the grocery store. Okay, I go to get health care at Market Street. And I tell my students this. I said, okay, I got my flu shot. And when I got done with the flu shot, they gave me a coupon, $15 off on your next appendectomy. Apparently, if you go to the deli place, they got an attachment for the slicer thing. Take that thing right out, $15 discount. Irony, inconsistency, absurdity, it is the other side of anger. And in many ways, can take intensely difficult emotions, turn them around, help us deal with them in more productive ways. It is also the case that in addition to healing us quite literally, turning anger into something useful, it also keeps us humble. There's nothing quite like self-deprecating humor. So we have Norman Cousins, we have Richard Pryor, among the most gifted of our actors that especially exemplify self-deprecation, Hugh Grant. You've seen all of these romantic comedies that he's in, and he's always this sort of a little rumpled sort of doofus that ultimately gets the girl in the end. Well, his own life had its own set of problems, but he's sort of the archetype of self-deprecating humor. And I have to tell you that we could use a little of this, especially where I work. You know, they call universities ivory towers for a reason. They're little emotional bubbles where people just can get full of themselves pretty quickly because no one tells them that they shouldn't. I work with a lot of people over there that are legends in their own mind, and sometimes you gotta let the air out of that a little bit. It's very helpful to me to understand that, and it's part of why this particular facet of my work is so helpful, because it does literally ground me in real life as opposed to what can become sort of rarefied air on a university campus. And I need this from time to time. Jeannie and I rode with her down to Slayton a couple weeks ago. There's a quilt shop there where she gets fabric and so on. And there isn't much for guys to do in a quilt shop. So I brought a book, and they've got a cat and so on. And so I waited all this thing out. And as Jeannie was checking out, the clerk gave me a little packet that had something in it and said, we generally give this to the guys that come in here and wait. And I looked at it, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. It sort of looked like a pen. And I couldn't find the thing like this. And it was, you know, it had a quilt shop logo on it. And I'm going, I don't know what this is. She said, it's a tire gauge. I said, well, I'm a guy. I said, I usually fix my car with a telephone and a credit card. She said, kind of figured that. I sort of had that coming, you know. Preachers tend to find themselves with more hot air than necessary from time to time. And thankfully, in my opinion, preachers are the subject of some of our really funniest jokes. So I went hunting for my three best preacher jokes to sort of leave this in that spirit. Old preacher on his deathbed summons to be with him at the moment of his death the local mayor and the city manager, brings them into his room, just holds their hand on either side of his bed. Mayor says, "We are glad to be here and with you in this event, but you know, what's the point? Why are you bringing? Have you got something to say to us?" He said, "No. Jesus has been my model my entire life, and he died between two thieves." Preacher gets up on Sunday morning and has just about had it. He calls in sick, lies through his teeth, heads out of town to play golf. About the third hole, St. Peter notices that, brings Jesus over, says, "You can let him get away with that?" Jesus says, "I got it covered, don't worry about it." Preacher is shooting a pretty decent round of golf, a couple shots better than typical. Peter says, "His comeuppance, any time, I got it covered, just relax." 17th hole, 180-yard par 3, crosswind over water. Preacher tees off, hits it, rolls into the cup. St. Peter is just aghast. He's been wanting a hole-in-one his whole life. What's the deal? Jesus goes, "Who's he going to tell?" Minister and a priest get into a car crash, wrecks the cars, totals them. Miraculously, they're both unscathed. Minister gets out, says to the priest, "Apparently God wanted us to be brought together today to have some time." And the priest says, "You're exactly right. Look at the miracle. Everything in my car is wrecked except this bottle of wine. I think Jesus would want us to share this and have a conversation." He gives the minister the bottle of wine. Minister takes a big old chug because it's been stressful. Hands it back to the priest, said, "Aren't you going to join me?" He said, "No, I think I'll just wait for the police." You might as well laugh. Amen.